Ernest Morton, Reel 3. Now, you've told me that you've left school in 1933 at the age of 15, is that right? And you were then interested in joining the film industry.
I was interested before, but I knew at the time already that the film was finished, you see. And I was willing to do anything to earn some money to help my mother, you see. And somebody sent out a young chap who had a business, wholesale business, selling buttons to the making up industry, you see, which was a very big industry. The biggest firm in Germany, which used to close for millions, was, by the way, a firm, CNA, which is here in Britain now ourselves, is a Dutch firm, you see. And they became quite, in the beginning, quite supporting the Nazis, really, you see.
CNA?
CNA, yes, very, that's a firm. And don't put it in because they may, when they hear about it, they will be so furious. It's not quite. It's all finished now. And they became good customers in Britain later on. And, but see, at that time, one first experience I had, which was very shattering for me, I was basically, in some ways, thinking that if you've done nice to people are nice to you, you see. So I like being nice to people, it's not very difficult. And therefore, it was suddenly a terrible shock that people who were my friends, I was very friendly, lots of my friends were people from the film industry because I'd been doing very minor parts in the films which came out at that time. And one or two were stars, boys who were my age. And these boys were very, one in particular was very, very brilliant. His father had been an actor, his grandfather was a debater. And he liked me. He was very insecure in himself. He was a born actor. I mean, when he was 10 or 12. And for some reason or other, I could always appeal to difficult people that only felt safe with me. They knew I wasn't a competitor. They knew I wouldn't undermine the situation. And I was interested in them because they were different from other people. Very sensitive one minute, quite arrogant in another, and quite interesting. So I was quite interested to be their friends, and we got on very well. The parents were always very pleased as I was their friend. I had a good influence on them, so they told me, I didn't know why. And one of them, who was very, very active and was very outstanding, and liked me. And suddenly, when I met him on the street, he just gave me a little sort of nod and didn't want to speak to me anymore, you see, because he was afraid to be seen as a Jew. Nobody knew I was a Jew, but just in case, you see. And that was very shattering for me, because I thought he was my friend. I didn't think he was a very sensitive person, a very nice person, a very friendly, a good father. And I gave him a little drink, but I didn't forget it, never forgot it. And then, at that time, when I knew I couldn't be in the film industry, I had to find something, so I came home from school, and there was this telephone call that this chap said, by the way, if Helmut wants to do anything, I would be very pleased to have him working for me anytime he wants. I said, well, do you want that? I said, yes. So with my own money, might as well do it. And but it's a business, it's a very boring business, but I could do something in there where some partners were interested in others. I could concentrate on business. And felt that Butters was the most important thing in the world, to my surprise. And was very good at selling buttons, but the problem there was most firms were Jewish, and the very big firms. And at that time, during the terrible economic period when everybody was very hard up, the people who controlled big firms found a way of supporting their family members who weren't very well off. Instead of giving them money, they went to the people who sold linings, suits, buttons, or raincoats, and said to them, you know, I buy your stuff, provided you take my cousin or my nephew, and he becomes your salesman, and you pay him commission. So they got him, of course, give him a job, and the other one didn't mind, they got the customer. But where did I come in? I felt totally out of this. I had nobody who did this for me because I had nobody who I knew who was in this business. I knew as much about it as you did, you see. And there was a funny, strange thing happened. The Nazis had a hate for it because they wanted to ruin the Jews and have them taken over by non-Jews. But they knew it would take a certain while. They said, couldn't do it quickly. So they were very cunning. So the Jews, the big firms, had bought the material, designed things, the models, and did all this sort of and sold it. But the people who cut the materials were outside workers. And they were when they started 100 years ago, they were outside workers and had become the bosses. Now they needed other outside workers. And there were many non-Jews who were very willing to do that and became their suppliers. And to do that, the relationship with them was very harmonious. The rich Jews were very generous because they needed them. The other ones were very grateful that they had this opportunity, even in such difficult times, to be indirect. They were not employed, they were freelance. So the Nazis looked at the thing and went to these outside workers. He said, why do you work for the Jews? Why don't you work on your own? They said, you can't work on the Jews, they have got the capital. Don't worry about it, we lend it to you. Without any difficulties, you see, interest free. So that's marvelous. So they started on their own. And immediately the biggest customer was CNA, and some said, they say, of course you buy from them, but you can, we don't mind. Now, they asked, yes, but where did you buy our buttons and our trimmings? There aren't any non-Jewish firms. I said, buy it from the Jews, from small Jews. So I said, I was a small Jew, my son was a small Jew. And I suddenly had all these neo-Nazi firms as my customer. And I did very well. They did very well, and I did very well. And when I was 17, I could look after my mother. I kept her financially alive. You see, that was my great surprise. And I had one customer who was very sophisticated. He became one of the biggest coat manufacturers in Germany. And in short time, he was practically a millionaire. And he bought the buttons for me because he was a small Jew. And it was very nice to me, actually. Always very friendly, but didn't say much. He was just friendly. He had been to England, actually, with this former Jewish employee, and they wanted to keep him here in England. They opened their own factory, they wanted to have him here. We found it quite interesting, almost after years in Austin, he spoke very good English and French and very educated. He went back to his home, you see, and his parents lived there and went back to Berlin. And one day, after 2 or 3 years of this, he said to me, you know, I come back from the end because we have now no Jewish button suppliers. And just nodded to me and I said, thank you, I understand, and left. That was really the beginning of the end, because I could see where could I earn a living. It would always happen again, you see. It was also, I was in the meantime 17 years old, 18 years old, and could see it was sort of just, you could sort of narrow and narrow. In the meantime, they had sworn out all the lawyers, all the film directors, all doctors were restricted, dentists were restricted, and every profession, you see, was suddenly a profession. So there were less and less chances. So that was, some had money, some were quite wealthy, so it was just filled us temporarily. Some of them had a cousin in New York or in San Francisco. So we wrote to them and they tried to get them over. So it was, everything was in turmoil. I had nothing. I didn't have my money when it was. When I couldn't earn much, I had very little money. Yes.
And meanwhile, I suppose the Nuremberg laws had come into being.
They were in the race things. You were not allowed to marry anybody who was non-Jewish. You were not, and they tried very much to split the people who had married non-Jews or Jews. They tried to undermine this. And it was very, very, you became now more and more sort of fearful. You were surrounded, and you just felt every day something happened which made life more complicated and difficult.
You were saying earlier, Ernest, how different Berlin had been from, you know, other more provincial towns in the countryside. Did Hitler, you know, from the time of the Nuremberg laws, and we're talking about, is it 1935?
Yes.
The Nuremberg words, yes.
Oh, yes.
Did he have, you know, were the population of Berlin becoming anti-Semitic?
No.
And no?
It was only, again, there was always an element of anti-Semitism in every country, which was in Germany too, but in Berlin less, and it wasn't aggressive. You see, an anti-Semitic one when was it, you see, about the Torah, right? And there's certain writers and like this, you see. It wasn't any natural activity from them. There were some movements that would differ from anybody, you know, they would have gone to deal with the communists, not the more with the Nazis, because they like upheaval, like looting and things like that. It's nice. But they weren't really concerned about it either. They were nice, delicate Jews. Then I had to run around with them at the time, and once I did it once more, then I didn't do it anymore, thank goodness. And I heard the people talking, and one woman said, well, when did we start looting? Not yet, I said, not today, you see. So I walked around and shouted the anti-Jewish slogans. They didn't look at me, I didn't shout anything, I just went with them, and I looked so harmless, and a small little boy, and running with them, you see, the woman. But I could have met somebody who was there on me, which I didn't think of. That was very strange. I should have known. I had one experience once when I was still a communist and was called giving myself another name. They always give their name. Everybody had other name as a communist. So people were confused. It sounded too many words, and they were actually. And I chose the name as Ernst Kaiser. Oh. Now Ernst Kaiser. It means Kaiser, means like emperor. Ernst. And the communist boys knew me as Ernst Kaiser, not as Hermann Mose. And one thing which I only recently said, I don't know what happened. In my school, it was very funny, before I took him, this was before I took him to college, were Nazis, but we were quite on friendly terms. And they knew that's against me, and that was against them. I was ignored. He didn't know I was communist to them, but I knew they were Nazis. I didn't mind that. And one day, one of these boys stopped one of the communist boys. We knew where the communists were, you know, they were less house and I was less. It was all like a village in the same part where you lived then, you know, like living here. You see, you know, if that happens, you know the communists are there. You know, I mean, it's quite easy. It was a legitimate party. And he once photographed me with one of the Nazis in a intervals in school and photographs, and then I've never understood. They showed a picture of me and this boy, to this little communist boy. Yes, do you know who this is? Yes, this is Ernst Kaiser. And next morning, when I went to school, I said, how are you, Ernst Kaiser? And I was really, at that time, a very petrified to see that this woman before he got into power. And I don't know what I said. They didn't do anything, didn't say anything, just said that continued to be quite nice. It was never mentioned again. And when the Nazis came to power, I was a bit uneasy, you see. And of course, if they would have met me in this cult, that would have been dangerous, you see. Which I didn't think of. This was really idiotic. After 40 years, I could think of where one day when I thought about it. But if I followed us to the email, that I wasn't surprised that they had this picture of me, you see. So it was sort of quite funny that just nothing happened. So anyhow, I hadn't lost my job yet. I still tried to find a way of getting out of it. And I went to Denmark, I went to Belgium, and so I tried to see that I could stay there, you couldn't stay there. If I stayed there, I wouldn't have done what to do. So I came back to Germany, and what happened then was I met this chap, the one who had told me that you couldn't buy buttons for me anymore, at the street. And he said, I'd like to talk to you. If I were you, I would advise you to leave Germany as soon as you can. Don't stay here. And look in my eyes. They have more. Don't stay here. Get out. Better today than tomorrow. But I knew at that time myself, because my brother in constitution, I knew quite I was very well informed. The only thing I wasn't informed was, can I do? And I did one or two quite clever things, actually, in retrospect. I was a member of a rowing club. This was a Jewish rowing club.
What and club was that? A really?
Rowing. I was very bad. My mother friends was good for me, so I did went in there to do her a favor. And one day we had a talk by an organization, organization for Jewish immigrants or something like this. This was an organization which had been founded during before the First World War, when the Russians, Jews, after pogroms, tried to flee to Germany, and because they knew they were liberal and could go there either stay there or go further. And of course, the Jews have faith of too many other Jews come in the settlement and the cemetery. They're not as similar as we are, you see. Otherwise, so Jews, we weren't really Jews in him. They're very proud of that. And they started the organization to help these refugees. But the real help was to get rid of them as quickly as possible, giving them money to go to America or to Palestine, anywhere. Don't stay in Germany, you see.
Yes, would these have been refugees from other countries coming to Germany? Yeah. Where would they be coming
before
from?
Before the war, when they were pogroms in Russia, you see, at that time. And they felt they had to go out, you see, they went anywhere. And they knew the Germans are better. But I only, they kept to Germany. And the German Jews organized this organization so that to give them a fair out, you see, they must stay here. And this organization, of course, was still alive when the Nazis came to power. And suddenly it was very handy for German Jews to go out. And this one of the directors of this organization came to our home club, we were Jewish, as a military Jewish, and told us the possibility to leave Germany, what is available, what's not available, and they would give me advice. And he was quite an arrogant man, and I think I didn't like him. And I went next to his office and said, what a marvelous talk he had given. He was most impressed. He was felt very happy because he could feel he didn't have the right way of talking, because people who were doctors or something like this, and doctors in, not a doctor of medicine, doctor of philosophy, that sort of thing, were very arrogant in Germany, you see, all of them, Jews and non-Jews. And he talked us not in the right way, you see. They were quite educated and so on, and it put us a bit down. But I ignored it. I knew that, you see. And he was very pleased that there was somebody who had admired him. And I said, you know, I see so many people, and Jewish people, customers, and so on, and some are quite wealthy. I think it's very important that you know about the possibilities to get out of Germany. And I would like to help you, I would like to speak to them, I would like to, and they will come to you, and they have money to give you something for your organization. And I don't want anything, you see, and I just thought it was marvelous, you see. And immediately I became his friend, you know, and he was quite arrogant, I was always afraid of him, but I was his theory. They were all like him. And important people, you see, important people were very thankful that I had to advise them to that. And this was my last resort. I said, if everything goes wrong, I get out to him, so he would help me out. He would have done that, actually, but sent me to some orphan part of South America or something. He wouldn't go to America. You go, I would, that meant that you would have gone to the moon if he would have taken me there. So that was one thing, which was my reserve. And one day, a new thing came. We had a normal passport, like everybody else. And suddenly, they started collecting our passports and giving me a new passport, not me, give you, if you wanted one, a new passport, which looked like the previous one, only there was a J of that size printed in it, J for Jew. And this passport, it was useless, because wherever we appeared, we got so we can't get in, because they were afraid I would stay there. They had unemployment, they couldn't cope with more people coming in. I mean, you know, it was a mess, of course, to be fair to them. So I knew, once I had this passport, I had no chance. Now I thought, it came gradually, you see, the police from time to time would send a passport letter to you, which was very polite. Could you please come as soon as today and hand your passport in? If you want, you can connect the new one, right? So I said to my mother, if I get this letter came after I was in business already, in the morning, phone me, and I will immediately that night leave Germany. And she phoned me one day and said, the letter has come. So I'd been previously in Belgium, in Holland, and then in Denmark. Then in Belgium, I needed a visa, which I had on my passport. I come back again. I went to the Belgian embassy and said, I would like to have a new visa to go to Belgium, look at passport. Yes, give me that. And then I went to the office, bought a return ticket to London. I had some distant relatives whom I didn't like, but I couldn't be choosers. And I sent a telegram that I will be visited in London, hoping for the best. And then packed a little suitcase. And I came home, and at 8 o'clock I went to the station, and went for the train to Aachen, which was at the border, actually to go to Belgium, so you could travel from there direct to Belgium. And when I went with the train, it was very empty. This was always empty. They had money to travel. And I had a very compartment for myself, and I came to the border of Aachen. Three SS people came in with machine guns under their arm and steel helmet, which I found very odd because they were usually elderly officials with clean uniforms, very harmless. They said your passport, please, and put a stamp and then you could go through. And these people were SS people. Came in, Hitler, 20, it was 10 minutes before 12, and looked at the passport, okay, later, yes, again. Looked at the German, because, as I found out later, they were really taking over the border at midnight. But they had never done it before, and Germans don't want to be inefficient. So they rehearsed already, I would say, person on me, that's not the same, right? And went out. And then I went to Belgium, and I left in Brussels, in front of me, and still a friend of mine was waiting for me, and said, oh, I didn't expect you to come, why not? Hitler has marched into Austria, and the border has been closed. And of course, if I wouldn't have gone out, I would have had to hand, my passport was already illegal, it was already not worth anything anymore, because I was instructed to hand my passport in. And I would have all had this new transport, but I would never go out. Right? So I came to stayed a day, 2 days in Belgium, and then I went on Sunday, so this was Thursday, and on Sunday, quite unimportant, to England. Yes, my relatives and mine said to collect me in Victoria Station when I arrived there, not very happy, mind you. And it was quite funny what happened to me on the way. As I'd never been in the crossing channel. It was all quite exciting for me. I was just 20 at the time. You see, I was born the 1st of March, and it was the 8th of March. You know, it sort of looked 17 or 16, looked great. And can show you in the picture what I looked like in my past. And on the boat, I had sort of explored the boat. And of course, we went to second class naturally. But I went to first class just to look what it was like. And while I was standing from second class, first class, looking over this sort of short journey, there was a young couple standing next to me, very elegant, very smart. When they sat over there alone, and they felt sorry for the second boy there alone, and started talking to me. And I talked to them, and they asked me if I came from Berlin. Oh, which is say, yeah, on a honeymoon, and we just been in Berlin. Isn't it lovely? And isn't it wonderful how quiet everything is? There's no riots like on the other towns. And they were obviously very enthusiastic about the Nazis. It's all political. I mean, they were really honest people, very nice people. I didn't see much about it. And then I said, yes, I come to London with a friend and so on, and they're very nice. We talked for a while. They're very, very charming, I must say. The first three English people I met. And then I went back to my compartment, and when we arrived in Dover, I changed over into third or second class, whatever it was, at that time. And when we arrived in London, they came and said, we've been looking for you everywhere. We wanted to give you a lift if you were in London, you see. I said, I've been collected. Oh, that's fine then, you see, and we parted very friendly. And when we after arrived, there was a huge Rolls Royce at the table with a chauffeur in things and saluted them. And they got in, and I thought, what would have happened if I would have gone inside? But I was aware of it. What made me uneasy was, I didn't tell them about the Jews, that I wasn't tell you that I came to Isaac to find the Jews. Because when I heard how enthusiastic they were, I didn't want to say anything, you see? I was told to be Nazis, you see? I mean, you never know. And I didn't, so I thought, I couldn't take the risk, you see? And so, of course, I was so funny, you know, this joke happened.
Were you able to have said goodbye to your mother? Did your mother know that you were going and going for good?
Yes.
Or hoping to go?
I was also prepared to come back if necessary at that time, you see? Because, I mean, if nobody wanted me here, it's very difficult to stay here when you're 19 years old and have no contacts. And now comes the big thing which was very awful. I went, there was, of course, I was toured already by somebody in Germany who was very wealthy, and she had lived in England, and she had lived in Jewish, in Switzerland, and family was saying, very, very wealthy, and she liked me. Well, she was very nice, but I wasn't very interested in her. And she told me, I'm always discussed with other young people, you see. English. It was very nice, nice girl actually. And she said, why don't you go to London? There is a Jewish authorities. they will accept you and you will get the support from them. You can stay there and give you the address and everything, right? So I went next day to the Wobernhaus and this is in Tavistock Square, street halls away from this Quaker Center where I later on met my wife and later on got married. It's a funny thing. And went there and then I found myself the lady in charge. She was a wife of a bank director. They all put huge society with good for you see. And had lots of money which the Jews had donated. So I put up, arrived, used my passport, etc. And at that time Hitler was in Holland and suddenly all the Austrian news came out. I mean, the whole situation had in these 2 days totally changed, right? They looked at my passport and said, you said you came as tourist, yes. I could have told my paper to the immigration officer, I come here to stay, but I said, sorry, you can't, you have to go away, you see. So I said, I'm tourist. I said, how long do you want to stay? I said, 2 weeks, right? I gave you visa for 4 weeks. So then the Jewish authority saw that, yes, no, we have lied. You have to go back to Germany, apply for a visa, and when you come back here, we will help you. Now, this was the most idiotic advice you could imagine under the circumstances. So, I contacted at the residence of the friends of friends, and it was very nice, but they had to look after their own family. If they were interested to have anybody at all, they were all very well to do, all had their money here and time at their businesses here.
How about your relatives, the people you were staying with? Could you tell me about your relatives? Because you would have been living with them now, is that right?
Yes, he was really the youngest brother of my mother. She's been very fond of him, quite good looking, quite nice. He was only in the 40s, so quite compared to the young parents, they're all very much older. And he had married a monster, they were Jewish. And one thing from their point of view in their favor, I mean, it's sad in a way. He was the only relatives we had who, when Hitler came to power, immediately went to Britain and had money. He had been working for one of the biggest radio manufacturers, which were very famous. They still exist now, and had also been a partner, and decided immediately that there was no future. And managed to get, I think at that time, which was a fortune, £20,000 a year in London, which was like to be £100,000, and started some business. And of course, it happened to many of them. In about 6 or 7 months, they had nothing left to see. Because they've been cheated. I mean, it come to a strange country, people, there are always people who exploit the situation, you see. And his wife, was a very peculiar woman, never knew what to marry her. Oh yes, his father-in-law was very rich and he had to give him a lot of money. So she hated my family, hated my mother because my mother was better looking than she was. And she was really involved and just pregnant. And she had suddenly money run out. Had found some woman who was many German Jews once they immigrated tried to learn something which could perhaps be a way of surviving when you're done with all sorts of things. And she had learned anything, but my aunt met this woman who was another refugee who produced continental chocolate. This is quite simple, I'll go to tell you now, it must be when you think of the ingredients. And this one, of course, is one aunt of mine, wasn't stupid. So they took the possibility and started it. But with the Facebook credit, worked day and night, very bad day and night, was very, very good, but totally useless. First of all, after they took all the things which the poor other woman had learned, she took stole the ideas, you see, and this woman couldn't compete against her with the dynamic of young work and so on. And I became then, I said, yes, please, I said, you can go there, do it, see what you can get. And then, and after 3 weeks, you see, I was back in square one, actually, I was very interested in photography. I met two young photographers, they recommended to me in Soho, they were quite willing to have me. And of course, normally, I could then go to the Jewish authority, they would have given me the money to live, you got 30 shillings a week, which you could live on. If you were very wealthy, to do with such a blind problem. Actually, so he was